Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the new curator of art at the Gilcrease Museum of Art. Laura Fry joined the museum about a month and a half ago from the Tacoma Art Museum in Washington, where she was the Halb Curator of Western American Art. There, she worked closely with the Halb family to complete their donation of nearly 300 works of Western American art. While she was there, she curated and designed the inaugural exhibition of that collection, helped produce the collection catalog, and organized the museum's first symposium of Western American art. All critical skills for expanding the reach and knowledge of Gilcrease's vast collection. Prior to her time at Tacoma, she spent 4 years at the Buffalo Bill Center for the West in Cody, Wyoming, as an educational and curatorial assistant, and a Frederick Remington research assistant, where she worked on the second edition of the Remington Catalog Raisonné, a comprehensive compendium of Remington's complete artistic output. On a day when the new Dillon Archive comes to our city, she lets us know there are still many treasures in Gilcrease's vast collection to be rediscovered, and shares some of her plans for getting that work out into the public eye. Laura Fry is my guest today. Laura Fry, welcome to Studio Tulsa, and welcome to Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Gilcrease finally has a new curator of art, which is that position has been vacant for a number of years, and that's very important for this museum. What interests you in Gilcrease?
Oh, just the incredible chances that we've got with the collection there. And as I've been finding, I've been here about 2.5 months, and the Gilcrease has one of the best American art collections in the country. The breadth is just amazing. They've got, of course, deep holdings of artists working with the American West, but they also have colonial portraits and Hudson River landscapes and modernists working in Taos, New Mexico, and it's absolutely incredible.
Was it a surprise to you to see the breadth of the collection once you took the job, or was it something you'd researched well before you decided to become the curator?
It's something I looked into as I was going through the interview process, and I wasn't completely aware until this past year what strength they had in areas outside the American West. And as I said, what I've come to discover is this is really an American collection with a Western flavor. And that's been very exciting. And it's been exciting to see the depth that the museum has in several individual artists. There's over 100 artworks by artists like Alfred Jacob Miller, Thomas Moran, George Catlin, and they're just incredible. The breadth that they have with some of these individual figures.
So once you came here, you obviously knew about the big pieces, like the Moran collections and the Yellowstone collection involved with that, or some of the individual pieces like the Homer or the Whistler, or some of these iconic pieces that are well known outside of Oklahoma. But as you're beginning to understand the collection, how do you go about learning it? Is it just walking through the vaults and actually looking through things, or are you looking through books that sort of tell you what you have?
Well, that's a great question. And I tell you, before I moved to Tulsa, it was very difficult to research the Gilcrease collection. There have been a handful of books published on masterworks of the Gilcrease, but they tend to focus on the same 200 to 300 works, which are fabulous, but that only tells you a tiny slice of the overall collection. And it was once I arrived, I started working with our digitization team. We're working to host our collections online this coming spring. And I started going through some of their records, so some of the digital records they had about 2,000 artwork records that they were researching, and I've been going through those. And it's also a matter of just going through the vaults. The best way to learn an art collection is to look at the work in person.
Have you found any pieces that could be, have been sitting back there for years that you say, wow, people should be seeing this?
Several.
Describe one.
Several. One of the greatest finds that I discovered just a couple weeks ago in the very back of the Gilcrease Art Vault is a 6-foot-tall painting by John Lafarge. John Lafarge was a significant American artist from the late 19th century. He was a stained-glass artist.
American Impressionist, sort of.
Absolutely.
Right,
and a painter. Too. He was a major figure in the American arts and crafts movement, and his work is quite well known. And this is a 6-foot-tall painting by John Lafarge. Very dark. It's almost surreal. It's a scene, kind of a German folklore scene, of a man playing the bagpipes leading a pack of wolves. It's really strange, and it's really cool.
Do you think it was an illustration at some point, or it couldn't have been? I mean, that large, it couldn't have been an illustration.
Well, he did do an engraving of it.
Okay.
So I did a little research. As soon as I saw this, I said, oh my goodness, I had no idea we had a John Lafarge painting, much less an enormous grand scale piece. And I did some research when I got back to my computer, even just a quick Google search to see if anything came up about this subject matter. Did he do any other versions of this? Is this a known work? And I discovered he did an engraving about 40 years before in the late 19th century. He did this painting about 1906. And in 1906, he was asked by a British newspaper, what's your best picture? And he named this piece that's at the Gilcrease.
And it's been sitting there.
And it's been sitting there.
Wow.
And it was even in a 2013 publication about John Lafarge, they listed it as a lost painting. And it's in the Gilcrease records. You know, we've got it in our museum database. It's there in the vault. We always knew we had it, but it's never been used. It's never been published. It's probably never been exhibited. So I'm really curious about how we can get some of these treasures that have been forgotten back into the public consciousness and back into areas where they can be used by the Gilcrease or perhaps loaned to other museums.
Well, certainly there is a way. We'll talk about that in a moment. What are some of the other finds you found?
There's a really wonderful collection of Mexican paintings at the Gilcrease. And some of these are on display. We have a handful of them. But there are several. We have a Diego Rivera portrait that's quite beautiful. But we also have works by many of his contemporaries from the 1940s. And they're surreal. And they're really interesting. And so that's another thread of the collection that I wasn't aware of until I started working here.
Something like Tamayo or some people like that or mm-hmm. people like that. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's and even some Spanish colonial artwork. There's a large painting from the 1600s of a Mexican Spanish colonial work. So it's an interesting thread to the collection that expands this art collection beyond just the United States and even into all of North America.
Well, you have this, as you mentioned earlier, it says Gilcrease has this collection of American art with a Western flavor. Mm-hmm. Your goal as curators to put out this collection in interesting and new ways, hopefully. What are some of the things you're thinking about as far as showing off this great collection?
Well, I think the Gilcrease collection, given that it's such a broad collection that covers the United States and even includes Canada and Mexico, we've got a unique opportunity here to present some of these artists who are primarily known for depicting the West in a much broader context. Instead of separating out Frederick Remington or Thomas Moran as these Western guys and putting them in a separate category, we can really show how they are part of the main American art story. And we can show that American artwork as a whole didn't just take place on the East Coast, that there was wonderful artwork happening all across this country, and the Gilcrease collection really shows the breadth of what has of artists' masterworks and movements that took place all across the country for the last 200 years.
It's funny, sometimes when you visit a museum, if a museum has an East Coast Thomas Moran, that will be in their American art collection, and something from, you know, the Green River or the Grand Canyon or Yellowstone will be in their Western art collection. You're talking about maybe merging that.
Absolutely. And I think by merging that, we can perhaps make connections that haven't been made before between someone like Winslow Homer and Charlie Russell. They were working at the same time. And Charlie Russell was even working in New York for part of his career. So There's some really, these guys weren't isolated at their own time period. They were all part of the same country. They were all part of the same paradigm in America. And how do these works relate to one another?
When you mentioned the Winslow Homer, you know, it's a East Coast breakers scene, women looking over the ocean, breaking on the rocks. Well, just maybe a gallery two away, you have Albert Bierstadt's West Coast Point Lobos. You could put those two together and sort of tells you a very interesting story of how artists were working. One considered absolutely Western, the other considered an Eastern artist, and they're doing the same virtually material.
And we even have a Martin Heed from Florida. So we've really, and we have works from Canada, so we really span all directions of this continent.
Well, you mentioned this is you're finding new things in the collection that you want to put out there. Certainly, in the Vision Tulsa plan, calls for a major expansion. How important is this to the museum to be actually show off the permanent collection?
Oh, I think it's tremendously important. One of the things I've been surprised by, and that one of the challenges I have, is some of our best artworks are in our vault. some of the absolute strongest works in the Gilchrist Collection are not currently on display. The Georgia O'Keeffe painting is in our vaults. Our best works by Frederick Remington are currently in the vaults. And we've got some fabulous artworks that are in our galleries that are on display, but we just don't have room to really showcase the full richness of our collection. And that's just looking at the artwork. And there's so much more when you look at the archive collection and the anthropology and the archaeology. But I think a new building and an expansion would let us tell a much fuller story of American art and would allow visitors to really experience a lot more of the works than they're able to now. We just don't have the gallery space now to properly show this collection.
My guest today is Laura Fry, the curator of art at Gilchrist Museum. She joined the museum about 2.5 months ago. She came to Gilchrist from the Tacoma Art Museum, where she was the curator of Western American art. Now, tell us a little about what you supervised in Tacoma. It was the Western art collection there?
Sure. And at Tacoma Art Museum, about in 2011, was approached by a family that had a collection of Western American art. And this is the Haub family, who are a German couple, but they also have family ties in Tacoma. And they proposed gifting the collection to the museum. And after they really worked through the process, they determined that they'd provide some funding toward a new expansion of the building. And I was brought on board after the gift was announced, but before the building plans were finalized. And my goal as the curator for this new collection and the first curator for the collection was to finalize the gift list, to produce the inaugural exhibition, and to do a full publication of this new collection for TAM. And this was really new in the Pacific Northwest. No institution from Portland to Seattle to Vancouver had any art collection like this at all. And this collection went from Charles Bird King portraits from the 1820s all the way up through contemporary artists like Clyde Aspavig and Bill Shank doing Western imagery today. And it really was, this was just a new audience. And some people
were skeptical. Surprising that Seattle or any of these Northwest museums didn't really have a strong Western American collection.
Well, I will say the institutions in the Pacific Northwest have very strong contemporary art collections and exhibitions, but there's not as much of historic American artwork in those regions of the country. They simply don't have collections like we have here in Tulsa.
They're all post-war cities for the most part.
Right, yeah. Right. And they've got some wonderful contemporary art spaces, but there's just not as much emphasis on any American art before World War II. And this collection was a chance to explore American art from the 19th century up through the early 20th in a way that really wasn't possible or wasn't something you saw very widely in that part of the country. And our audience was really surprised.
What was the reaction to it?
It knocked our socks off.
Really?
And some of our trustees and supporters at the Tacoma Art Museum told me after this exhibition opened, they had a chance to see it. They said, I wasn't sure about this artwork. I didn't think I liked cowboy art. That wasn't my thing. And then they saw the sheer breadth of the imagery and the types of artworks and the styles that were part of this collection and the beauty that it captured of the American landscape, and people were really won over. We had overwhelmingly positive reactions to this collection, and it was really exciting to see. And one of the things we made sure to do in Tacoma was to also involve the Native American community in the Pacific Northwest. Much like Oklahoma, there's a wide variety of Native nations in the Pacific Northwest, and they're a significant part of the population there. And many of the images in this collection depicted Native Americans, but most of them were by non-Native artists. So we invited commentary by members of the Native communities in the region to react to the artworks, to give their viewpoints, and we included second labels all through the exhibition of community members giving their reactions. And it was really interesting, and it provided a conversation from these works.
I'm glad you mentioned that initial reaction from your trustees, because even here in Oklahoma, where we have a long tradition of showing off Western American art, you have the Cowboy Hall of Fame down in Oklahoma City, Gilchrist and Philbrook to an extent here in the city. And I think there's a significant part of the museum going public that think of it's just cowboy art. So how do you put that out there to sort of transcend that pejorative label?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's kind of funny. There's not that many depictions of cowboys in the Gilchrist collection.
That's true.
There really aren't.
Well, there's some Russells and Remingtons.
Yep. Well, Remingtons, let me think here.
No, there's a few, but...
Only two or three of the Remingtons in our collections show cowboys.
And they show military men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They show cavalry. They show Native Americans. They show hunters. They show mountain men. So it's this whole variety of figures. So it's humorous to me now that I'm really coming to know the collection that it's because it's so there are a few images of cowboys to be certain, but it's a fairly small percent.
So how do you transcend that label though?
Sure. Well, one of the things I'd like to do going forward this summer, I'm planning a permanent collection exhibition of Southwest modern works and looking at the influence of modern art trends from the late 19th through the early 20th century in the American Southwest, and hoping to maybe get past that idea that Western art equals one style, one realist style, one documentation style, that's it, and to show that artists working in the Southwest or depicting the Southwest in particular were interested in a wide variety of artistic styles and trends of their era. And you know, many of these artists were picking up on avant-garde movements in Europe. Many of them studied in Europe. And it's a way to show that again that this imagery that spans the whole country is also forward thinking and was also picking up on the latest things of its day.
There's one piece that is on display now that really shows that off, and I think that's the Ernest Blumenschein. It's in the foreground. It is a traditional sort of Western subject, but when you look in the background, it looks like something out of it looks like Marsden Hartley, or it looks like. Something in early 20th century of France or yeah. Germany, really German, I would say. There's more German influence there.
Yes, Ernest Blumenschein's a great example. His earlier work, he started out as an illustrator in the 1890s, and his earliest works are very realist. They're still quite beautiful, but they're very traditional, very realist. And as he was working in New Mexico and started working with other artists who had studied in Munich, who brought some of these modern ideas to the Southwest, his works became much more modern. And when you look at a painting like Superstition, which is currently on view at the Gilcrease, you're right, it has this very realist figure in the foreground, and the background is a totally abstract landscape. And the painting is all about this idea of superstition, and what is the superstition in the Southwest? Is it the Native American religion, or is it Christianity, which when it was brought there certainly would have seemed like a new superstition?
Yeah. And there are other artists like that too. Maynard Dixon is another one who would draw again this or paint this figurative person in the foreground, and when you look at this sort of canyon country, and it's like straightated modernism in the background.
Certainly, and Maynard Dixon is an artist I would love to add to the Gilcrease collection. We don't have any of his work.
Really?
Yeah. So we have several of his contemporaries and some of his friends are in the collection, but that's a great example of an artist I'd like to add to keep expanding the Gilcrease.
So I imagine this first couple of months is sort of, okay, what is my palette to work with here? I assume you're getting to that point. When will we start seeing exhibits that sort of look at your sort of viewpoint of sharing the art with the public?
This summer is when I'm planning to do a first exhibition that I'll be starting from based on this idea of Southwest modern and modern images of the Southwest. But even right now, you know, since arriving, I've been working on three different exhibitions in the last 2.5 months. And these are works that were projects that were already in process before I arrived. But it was really thrilling to come in and help work on the layout for the Rick Bartow exhibition. That was just amazing. And we'll be opening an exhibition of sketches of William R. Lee, and I'm working with our guest curator, Holbrook Lawson. This is a whole range of work from really rough sketches up to his finished paintings, and it includes a lot of works that we've never had on view before.
So this is from your collection?
Yes, all from the Gilcrease Permanent Collection. And William Lee is one of those artists, I think, people know about him. He does these very sensationalized views of the American West that are hyper-masculine and very action-packed. But his landscapes are quite sensitive and beautiful and even start to look fairly modern in some ways. He reduces the landscape to its basic shapes in some of his works.
And you also, his use of color, too. Mm-hmm. It's his color, you know, most of the time you expect to see this huge explosion of color, and a lot of his colors are muted. It's almost like he's, you know, it's like when you go out to the Canyonlands and there's the morning sun, the sunset sun, and the view of the rocks then, and then there's the midday sun, and it was almost like you preferred to do the midday sun to sort of mute the colors, and that's a very modernist tactic.
And he professed to hate modern art, but when you actually look at his work, you can see that there is certainly an influence of some of those modern painters on his work.
Another exhibit, which is just open already, is a centennial exhibit to Willard Stone. Now, coming from the Pacific Northwest and Buffalo Bill before that, did you have any knowledge of Willard Stone? Very little? I really think he's an Oklahoman artist that people don't really know outside of Oklahoma.
You know, absolutely. And I'm sad to say I was not aware of his work until I started researching the Gilcrease Collection. And I think that's a shame. I think his wood carving is extremely strong. I think could easily hold up anywhere in the country. And it's great that he has such recognition in Oklahoma, but it'd be great to send some of his work on the road someday or to help expand his reputation, because I really have been, since I've come here and started working with his sculpture in person, it's just lovely. It's really wonderful work.
You sort of tackled the word that sort of keeps him from seeing a wider public, and that's a wood carver. When we think of wood carver, we think of craft, not art. How does his work transcend craft to art?
I would say it's really the forms. It's his intention. He's not creating utilitarian objects or, you know, you think of wood carving as being something associated with furniture or with objects you use in everyday life.
And or these figurative decorative objects.
Right. I think there can be a lot of merit to decorative objects. Mm-hmm. But I also think that Willard Stone's work is really, it's got a larger presence to it, and even though he's using wood, not bronze, or no, he did do some bronze sculpture, but the majority of his output was in wood carving. It's I think his works have enough of a monumentality, even in their tabletop size. The compositions are so strong; they really carry a much heavier weight and a much a stronger presence than I think just a decorative object or a utilitarian object. So I think what's one of the barriers also that I'd love to break down with American art is thinking about different media and the relative value. I don't see a distinction myself between fine art and, say, decorative arts. I think you can see equal merit in something made out of ceramic as you can in something made from bronze or oil on canvas.
My guest today is Laura Fry, the new curator of art for Gilcrease Museum. She's been on the job about 2.5 months. She was previously at the Tacoma Art Museum and before that at the Buffalo Bill Center in Cody, Wyoming. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we were talking about Vision Tulsa earlier. The actual proposal for Gilcrease is a major increase in your exhibit space for the permanent collection and for changing exhibits among the permanent collection, as well as a large, large gallery for traveling exhibitions and sort of blockbuster exhibitions. What will this do for the Gilcrease?
Well, I think it could give us a chance to be the one museum in this region that can take major traveling exhibitions, because no museums in Oklahoma have a large temporary exhibition space. And it's something that we really could bring in large-scale shows that, you know, anywhere from Kansas City down to Fort Worth, that there's no museum in between that has the facilities to host a major exhibition that's traveling.
So you're talking about like big shows that are taking up the exhibit space at the National Gallery or the Museum of Modern Art or the Met or the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these sort of, 200, 300 piece shows. Mm-hmm. And that will really allow us to do that.
It would. Right now, our largest temporary exhibition space can host about 70 works comfortably, and that depending on scale, of course. But to take something that's the much beyond that scale, we just simply don't have the space.
Well, you know, in the previous days, when like the Moran a retrospective that the National Gallery organized, which depended so much on Gilcrease to make it happen, it was most of the permanent gallery collection became the Moran exhibit. And, of course, that's not really great for showing off the treasures of the museum.
Right. And so when you have to empty out your permanent galleries to show a temporary exhibition, it means that you can't show the wonderful works that you've got there. It also disrupts, say, school programs. If you've got education programs that are planned to come through an exhibit space, you can't just empty it to bring a temporary exhibition because, of course, we want to provide excellent education opportunities for Tulsa.
Now, will this added exhibition space, one of the things that Gilcrease has to manage very carefully is, well, for example, Right now you have the Willard Stone exhibit in your Early Americas gallery, which that was sort of the place for the showing off some of the archaeological finds that are a part of the collection. Will this allow you to really sort of be balanced between archival material, artwork, sculpture, paintings and drawings, and, you know, paper and the archaeological collections?
Certainly. And one of the things that we're planning to do going forward, no matter what happens with the April 5th vote, is to do a new interpretive plan for the Gilcrease Museum and to start thinking about how we can look at the disparate, perhaps, collections we've got and find some common threads across all of these different collections and think of ways of integrating some of the collections and displaying them as a whole versus, well, over here we have our paintings and over here we've got our points and over here we've got our archaeology. And so so we'd like to take a more holistic approach and find some common areas of conversation versus separating all of these distinct collections.
So give us a sense how that would work. You obviously have a lot of colonial archival material. Do you put facsimiles of the Declaration of Independence and some of the letters that went out in that colonial period next to the Houdon sculptures and the paintings and just sort of create a period room, if you will?
Possibly. It also might be taking a universal theme or idea and exploring how that touches all of the different collections. Say, even looking at something like women in the arts. We can look at women artists who are painting and sculpting. We can look at depictions of women in some of the artworks in the Gilcrease collection. But there's also several prominent Native American women artists like Maria Martinez or Nan Peo. We can look at historically at some of the documents that might relate to women's role in society. But that would so taking a universal idea like that could help us look at all of the collections as a whole. And that's just one. We could look at families. We could but it's finding a common thread that we can find throughout these different collections.
Well, you earlier talked about finding this John Lafarge painting. When is that going to go up?
Well, it's not on the schedule yet. We're still working out some of our schedule the next couple years. But I'd love to do an exhibition somewhere in the next couple years of works that have never before been on view at the Gilcrease Museum.
And you think it would be a great show?
There's a lot of wonderful work, things that just we haven't shown before. And I think this could be an opportunity for us to do a crowdsourced exhibition where perhaps the museum comes up with a list of, say, 200 works or 200 objects and then invites the public to vote. You know, we host something on social media or people who come in person to the museum can vote and we take, say, the top 30 objects and that becomes the exhibition. So I'm curious about experimenting with ways that we can involve the public in rediscovering this museum.
Yeah, well, it's a great treasure and more people do need to rediscover it. I think most people in Tulsa have been there, but they say, okay, I've done that. And the key is to make it a living, breathing institution of culture. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you will add to that role. And we look forward to seeing your work at Gilcrease. Laura, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Gilcrease Museum's new curator of art, Laura Fry, sharing some of her plans for sharing the collection with the public. She was previously the Haub Curator of Western American Art at the Tacoma Art Museum. You can learn more about the Gilcrease collection at gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.